Okay, we're going to get going here, members, and wait until we want to have a quorum. We have, you know, got some very important, difficult decisions to make over the next few weeks or month, and of course, one of them are the cuts that have been proposed by the governor's office on top of the unallotments. And I think there was some misunderstanding as to maybe the way the unallotments play into this that have already been made versus the proposals. So, Doug, Mr. Berg, did you have a little sheet to hand out or not regarding?
Wasn't ready.
Oh, not yet. Well,
I gave it to you.
I know. Well, I didn't know if you had copied it for the committee, but we'll get it to them next week then, or next Thursday. So with that, Chancellor McCormick, Ms. King, welcome to the committee, and go ahead with what you've been doing to meet the $50 million on allotments and what you're going to do if it's another $10.5 million on your budget.
Mr. Welcome. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. Laura King, the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer, has joined me at the table. And we've been asked to talk about the impact of the governor's February 15th budget proposal that would reduce the system's appropriation for fiscal year 2011 by $10.5 million, as well as previous budget reductions that we have experienced. Before we get into the details, I would like to remind you of the critical role that higher education plays in keeping Minnesota economically vital. Last week, you heard from University of Minnesota President Robert Brunix about the proud tradition this state has had in supporting education at all levels. He noted that we continue, even today, in these dire times, to outperform many other states. But he believes we are clearly slipping. I agree. We have seen the state appropriation slip from covering about two-thirds of the cost of instruction in 2000 to about 50% or less today, depending on the type of institution. Our college and university presidents have been planning for these cuts, and you may have been contacted by constituents that will be affected. I've had long and thoughtful talks with the college and university presidents, as you might suspect. They report that they're making hard and painful decisions. At Minnesota State University Moorhead, President Edna Szymanski has put in place hiring restrictions, identified three academic programs for closure, consolidated support and administrative functions, and used one-time federal stimulus money to offer early separation incentives. She recently announced plans to leave more than 50 vacant faculty and staff positions unfilled. As you know, Representative Reinert at Minnesota State University Mankato, President Davenport is declaring a retrenchment of 80 probationary and tenured faculty positions and eliminated 21 programs. The university is using early separation incentives to reduce involuntary separations as much as possible and is planning to reduce faculty and staffing in 170 programs. At Minnesota Community and Technical College, President Phil Davis has made administrative cuts and had to identify several instructional programs for elimination. At all the campuses and in the system office, we've been planning for the cuts. Presidents are consulting with bargaining units, student associations, and other stakeholders as we make these difficult decisions. In the system office, we're also eliminating jobs and cutting services. We've taken our proportionate share of the cuts, and Ms. King will give you more details on that in her remarks. These cuts come at a time when our services are in demand more than ever. In the current recession, we have seen dramatic proof that the people of Minnesota turn to us when times are tough. This fall semester, our enrollment grew by 7%, by more than 12,600 new students, the largest headcount increase ever. This growth was especially seen at the two-year community and technical colleges, which experienced 8.7% increase. 13 colleges had increases of more than 10%. Though we don't have official numbers yet, early indications are that the spring enrollment is also going to be a record high. Preliminary estimates are that we are looking at a 7.8% increase in our headcount enrollment over last spring semester. Now, these are new students, not necessarily recent high school graduates. Fall enrollment of students age 25 and over increased by 14%. Some laid-off workers are seeking training for new and different jobs. Some are employed but seeking new skills or careers to get better jobs to support their families. They are adults who are working while going to school. The colleges and universities are coping with these increases and doing their best to meet the demand despite declining revenues. The 32 colleges and universities located throughout the state produce 34,000 graduates each year who join the state's workforce and keep our business industries and services running. More than 80% of them stay in Minnesota to work or continue their education, and more than 86% get jobs related to their field of study. It is important to note that the system is committed to increase access, opportunity, and completion in higher education for Minnesotans. We serve more than 40,700 students of color who make up 16.2% of our headcount enrollment. This is an increase of 36% between 2005 and 2009. The number of low-income students we serve, as measured by the number who receive Pell grants, also has increased substantially. In the fall of 2009, we had 33% increase in these students over the previous year. I've asked Laura King to talk in more detail about the budget, but I would like to just give you a little context. The governor is proposing a $10.5 million cut for 2011. This is on top of the governor's $50 million unallotment last June from the system's appropriation for the current biennium, which also is scheduled to take effect in 2011. Together, these cuts will reduce the budget for the system to the fiscal year 2006 funding level. In 2006, I think this is an important statistic, we had 20,650 fewer students in headcount enrollment than we have today. If all of these students were at one institution, it would be larger than St. Cloud, the Minnesota State University at Mankato, and more than twice the size of Minnesota State University Moorhead, or four times as large as Riverland Community College. Everyone in this room, I think all of us, know that higher education is the key, the long-term investment in our people, the key to Minnesota's economic recovery. Every study that's been done credits higher education for Minnesota's high levels of productivity and the high quality of life. If this state is to thrive, we need to not only maintain but increase the number of people with at least some college. The state demographer and the state economist are very clear on this point. A high school degree is no longer enough to guarantee a job that will adequately support a family. President Obama has set a goal to have America regain its lost ground and have the highest proportion of students graduating from college in the world by 2020. He has said that all Americans should be prepared to enroll in at least 1 year of higher education or job training to better prepare our workforce for the 21st century economy and this global competition. As part of this initiative, community colleges have been called upon to produce 5 million more graduates by 2020. We are eager to do our part to make Minnesota's educational attainment rate the highest in the world, but continued cuts mean that the state is going in the wrong direction. I want to close by saying a few words about our students. Their leaders are represented here today, and thank you for coming. As the state appropriations declined, our students have borne the brunt in the form of rising tuition. The Board of Trustees is committed to keeping tuition as low as possible, but we also are committed to providing a quality higher education. Last year, we agreed to limit our tuition increases to 5% per year and to use federal stimulus money to decrease the burden that would fall on students by 2%.
Well, Mr. Chancellor, just let me interject here that we wrote that into law. I don't know if you...
I believe...
You kind of agreed to it, but it was...
And that was a...
Wasn't an easy agreement.
But I do want you to know that this board is committed to affordable access to education as well as the committee. The Board of Trustees is not wavering on the commitment, but I would like to remind the committee that we made that agreement before we knew about the $50 million unallotment and the governor's proposed $10.5 million additional cut. But, you know, with these kinds of cuts, there are consequences. In order to balance the budgets, considering the tuition limits, the reduction of state funding, and the increased demand for services, the presidents have had to look at closing programs. Many of you have contacted me directly and asked us to take a second look at specific programs slated for closure. And we will, of course, do that. But in the end, I have to stand behind the presidents who are doing their best to balance the budget with unpopular choices and not run a deficit, which we must not do. As I said before, we're eager and ready to lead the system into the future. We want to serve our students. We want to assist the state in economic recovery and position us to lead the world in educational attainment. Please, and I plead with you to do what you can, all of you, to protect Minnesota's higher education legacy and to protect Minnesota's future and the future of your grandchildren. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks. Laura King will talk about the detail of the budget unless you have questions for me at this time.
Members, should we let Ms. King go first and then we'll get into... And Ms. King, your presentation will tell us exactly what happened with the $50 million in cuts and the $30 million that we agreed to and the $10 million that is being proposed. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. I would like to, I think you all have copies of this before you, and I'll try to move through it quickly, but there's lots of information here I think that is really important to our conversation. First of all, to repeat a message that we shared with this committee a year ago, the principles that we're using to approach this challenge, first of all, our eye remains forever first on the students that we serve. We will, under all circumstances, in our decision-making, try to take into account both our mission and our service to the economic development needs of the state and all the communities in which we reside. And finally, our planning has taken a multi-year approach with a goal toward positioning the system for long-term financial viability. We are not viewing this as a short-term challenge. To the chair's question, the graphic you see before you illustrates what has happened to our state appropriation over the course of the last several legislative sessions. The system's beginning base appropriation for fiscal 10 and 11 was $686 million, as referenced in session law. Although the session law said $686 million, that level was never funded. The base was first reduced to $614 million, and that was our beginning fiscal 10 funding level. In fiscal 11, our revised base was $666 million, which is a $20 million reduction from the original, and then an additional $50 million unallotment reduced the system's fiscal 11 appropriation to $616 million. And then on top of that, we have the $10.5 million that we've heard about most recently from the governor. Overall, the system's fiscal 11 base was reduced 12% from the beginning session law position to the number that's now before the committee at $605.5 million. As the Chancellor mentioned in his remarks, if we finish the session at $605 million, we'll have an appropriation that's level with our fiscal 2006 amount. And this reflects the recommendation to return both us and the University of Minnesota to 2006 funding levels. We have made some adjustments here for some things that the staff know about for comparability, but apples to apples, this is a reflection of what has happened in state appropriation funding over the last several years. And I'd ask you to remember this chart as we move through the next several, because it's instructive to the pressures that our presidents have been contending with. Foremost is the reversal of course that you see on the chart on the screen. In 2000, state appropriation represented 67% of the funding available to the colleges and universities, while tuition represented 32%. In 2011, we estimate that state appropriation will have dropped to 45% and tuition will have risen to 55%. This is a very powerful swing at work in campus planning. It would cost about $242 million for the state to reverse that position, and we would drop tuition by $242 million and increase state appropriation. That's how much slippage there's been in the relationship between the public commitment and the private commitment through tuition. This relationship varies from campus to campus. We have some campuses that have an appropriation that's as high as 68% of their revenue, while others might be as low as 43%. And similarly, we have some campuses that have tuition that represents as little as 32% of the total, and some as high as 57%. That is in large measure a reflection of the relationship before the merger. The legislature and the governor in days gone by had expressed a public policy preference that the state universities be more tuition reliant and the technical colleges be less tuition reliant. And that relationship has stayed largely intact, even as we've seen these trends over the last 10 years. We view it as a very substantial watershed to see those lines crossing. That represents a very substantial retreat from the public's historical commitment to higher education, and is quite a worry for us from a long-term planning standpoint. The Chancellor mentioned the increase in enrollment. You'll see in this graphic we've had an increase of over 35% since 2000, almost 40,000 FYE, and that growth has occurred both at the colleges and at the universities. It's also occurred both out-state and in-state. It's been an across-the-board, border-to-border increase in enrollment over the last 10 years. In 2000, we had 114,000 FYE students. By 2011, we're estimating 155,000. Very powerful increase, and creating very strong pressures on the campuses. The next chart illustrates for you the combination of those two effects, the loss of state appropriation support and the increase in enrollment support has translated into a decline in state appropriation per FYE every single year since 2000, with the exception of 1 year when it ticked up a couple dollars above the line. We have had less state appropriation per student every year in this decade, a decline of 16% in nominal dollars, and 37% when we adjust for inflation. That helps us see the budget pressures that the colleges and universities are under. If we add in tuition and put the two revenues together, you can see in 2000, the colleges and universities had about $7,100 per FYE in total revenue. By 2011, that had declined to $6,400. So they're serving almost 50,000 more students with less resources per student, combining state appropriation and tuition. It doesn't ring right, because you all have heard about such large tuition increases. So there might be a sense that we have all this tuition revenue that should show up in these charts. The tuition revenue largely replaced state appropriation. It did not enable us to show strong increases in total spending, but rather just to substitute a state dollar for a tuition dollar. You can see on the next chart what's happened with our tuition increases. We had some very, very strong tuition increases in the early part of the decade. But since 2008, the board has been very aggressively pushing down on tuition increases. We averaged 4.9% in 2010 before the use of the federal stimulus money, 2.2% in 2009, and 3.6% in 2008. So we've been working the last several years to really control the rate of increase in tuition, even in the presence of loss of state support. One final slide about some of the demographic information to illustrate for you what we represent as a percentage of the state's total higher education production, I can use that language. The state had 262,000 headcount students enrolled in higher education in fiscal 8 at all the different providers: University of Minnesota, the private colleges, the private career schools, and the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Our colleges and universities delivered 44% of all the higher education delivered in Minnesota in 2008. We delivered 65%. The state colleges were 44%, and the state universities were 19%. University, 13%, private colleges, 14%, and the private career schools, 10%. So we are absolutely the primary provider of higher education in Minnesota, and we have been doing it under increasingly competing demands. Very strong enrollment increases and very strong downward pressure on revenues. So how have we dealt with it? We've had a couple of strategies that we've been working for the last several years. The first one, of course, is just good old-fashioned cost control. The technology resource investment has helped us with this. We've been able to use technology, frankly, to replace people in a lot of the service, in a lot of the service areas on the campuses. We've used the web to do a lot of the work that people used to do at registration windows and cashier windows. We've seen class size increases. We've seen a lot of tightening up in catalogs. You'll hear from presidents in your conversations about reviews they're doing on campuses. You might hear about program closures or difficulty for students to get the classes they want. That's all part of tightening the catalog so that we're offering classes only when we have enough enrollment to cover the cost for those classes. You see very few classes anymore that have 8 or 10 or 12 students in them. The threshold is much more likely to be upwards of 18 to 20, and that's translating into impacts for student completion rates. We've had hiring restrictions in place for several years, and they remain in place. Most of the presidents have taken into the president's office every single decision that they make on their campus to hire. That's viewed now as an extremely strategic decision because the resource capacity for additional hiring is so limited. Our campuses are going through lean process reengineering exercises with assistance from other campus colleagues, reviewing administrative processes, reviewing student service processes, both to improve services and to identify means they might have to take costs out. And finally, one of the consequences of all the program review is, and you might hear about this, is that we've had a strong reduction in the granting of faculty release time. It's a very strong historic tradition that faculty are turned to for leadership contributions on their campuses, and they're released from their teaching obligations to do that. We have rolled that back very substantially in the last several years in order to keep faculty costs in front of the student to the greatest extent possible. That has all kinds of implications for how the work gets done and who's doing the work, but it is a means we have for cost control. We've also been pursuing new revenue development, and you've seen several announcements here in the last couple of weeks about large grants that have been made to our colleges for several new program developments, one at Northland, one at Pine. Mankato received several large federal grants. We're pursuing all avenues for outside funding assistance for program development and staff development. We're also pursuing productivity and efficiency efforts. Some of those really come under the cost control remarks, but some also come under examination of what programs we offer, what is the market for them, what is the wage expectation for them. We're also, as a result of the first three, really seeing very strong enrollment management results. In 2009, we had a decrease in our total employment headcount of 215 across the system, while we had an increase in student headcount of over 12,000. So we're serving more students by the thousands with fewer faculty and staff.
Is that, Ms. King, that's just a faculty number?
That's faculty and staff. The faculty totals from fiscal, from fall of 9 to fall of 10, both full-time and adjunct, are about flat in the presence of a large enrollment increase. And the, what most of this decrease in headcount that we're seeing here is staff-related, but it's both faculty and staff combined.
Staff-related, meaning the janitors or the vice president?
No, Mr. Chair, it's, let me pull out my data sheet for you. It's across all classifications. I can tell you specifically what it is here. Bear with me. I've got a lot of paper in front of me. And one of these pieces of paper tells me the answer. That's it. In fiscal 7, we had in total about 18,000 headcount. In November of fiscal 7, November of fiscal 9, we had 18,007. Faculty and staff, we had 17,005, and three falls later, we had 17,007. So the overall increase here is about 200, and enrollment increase has been, over the same period, has been over 10,000. That tells us that our productivity has gone up substantially in the last 3 years, that we have fewer faculty teaching more students. We have the same number of AFSCME folks cleaning more square footage. We have the same number of MAPE and MMA folks doing more student services, more advising, more financial aid, all the services that are provided really on the basis of how many students walk in the door. As the students have gone up, the number of folks there to provide the services have stayed flat.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know some of the colleges had programs where they would, if you're unemployed and laid off, you could take courses at a reduced rate. I think Cambridge had that, and Ramsey had that.
Noka Ramsey had it, Normandale had it, and there was one other that's escaping me.
Do we know how that program affected the student numbers that we're talking about here in terms of increases that maybe were temporary? I don't know. I mean, were those increases temporary as long as that, or are they still offering that program? Or
Mr. Chair, they are not still operating the program, and I do have your answer. I just don't have it in my head. It was... they were, each one was done a little differently. The Normandale program was limited on a budget standpoint. You know, the Ramsey program was limited on a credit standpoint. You could take 2 credits or 3 credits only. The Normandale program, as I recall, had quite a bit of demand, but the demand didn't persist from one semester to the next. So if it's all right, Mr. Chair, we'll put together some more complete information and get it over to you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. King, can you clarify again with the numbers, the 18,000 and the 18,007 for fiscal year 07 and fiscal year 09? Was that staff and then the other numbers were faculty? I wasn't tracking that. I apologize.
The first number is the total, and the second number was the faculty and staff totals separately. To the chair's question about managers, supervisors and managers. So total staff, faculty and staff and managers, all of it together was the 18.5 to the 18.7. Just the portion that was faculty and staff and not supervisors or managers was the 17.5 to 17.7.
Okay, thank you.
So you can see, Mr. Chair, that the colleges and universities have really utilized every resource they have to deliver services, maintain that delivery in the face of two very competing pressures.
So, Ms. King, those figures are, who's the 17,500 to 17,700? The 1,000 people that aren't included in there that are all staff, are they like vice presidents down to the janitor?
Mr. Chair, the
middle management? Who are they?
Mr. Chair, they're MMA and administrators and managers. MMA, of course, is an organized group. MSCF, MUSAF, MAPE, IFO, and AFSCME are all in that 17,000 number I gave you.
And MMA?
MMA is in the 1,000, the separate number. We classify administrators and managers, supervisors and managers, separate from faculty and staff. And MMA is a manager.
So MMA is in the 18,500.
Right, right.
And are there, for the numbers you include in the staff, is a laid off or early retired faculty, as an example, that gets replaced by an adjunct, is that still the same person being there then, according to your numbers?
Mr. Chair, if that happened before November of 2009 and a full-time faculty were replaced with an adjunct, it would be in these numbers. But I don't think it happened before November of 2009. Most of the faculty early retirement buyouts aren't separating until next spring. I did look at the full-time and adjunct data recently, and we've seen no trending up or down for either one. Full-time is about the same, and adjunct is about the same. Now, we might look at that again in 18 months and see if we see a different result. But we don't expect the early retirement impacts to hit these numbers until next spring.
I didn't hear if you said your numbers were up by 215 or down. I didn't.
The number, Mr. Chair, from fiscal 8 to fiscal 9, the overall employee headcount decreased by 215, while enrollment headcount increased by 12,600. So our total employment went down and our enrollment went up.
You know, I've heard of layoffs in some of my Minsky systems.
Recognize that, Mr. Chair, that...
Not hiring.
I'm sorry?
I haven't heard of any hiring. I've heard of layoffs.
Mr. Chair, there is hiring. As sections are added to respond to enrollment increases, financial aid demands have pressed financial aid offices into stress, there has been hiring in both the faculty, mostly the faculty ranks, not so much in the staff ranks, but some. But net, you heard the Chancellor mention the work that Moorhead's doing with their vacancies. Mankato's doing the same work. There will still be hiring that happens while there's positions eliminated alongside. That's just being responsive to the marketplace.
Representative Haas.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I would like to ask some questions on this redesigning process, if that would be all right.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Chancellor, on our redesigning, it seems to be an intra-redesigning, meaning it's happening within the individual campuses. And at St. Cloud State University's campus, this redesigning process started before the unallotment and, of course, then before the deficit. So it had to be more than just dollars. Could you tell us a few of the other things that redesigning was going to do, what that criteria was, and then help me with what type of savings you think you're going to get from that redesign, especially on the SCSU campus or any other campus you would like to model for me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, the redesigning work has been going on as part of the Chancellor's relationship with the Presidents for years. Every President is expected to be a partner in the strategic planning process with the Board's strategic plan, and that translates into work on the campus to redesign their work to line things up. So it has been going on as a usual course of business. We also see it occur, particularly when we have a presidential change, like we did at St. Cloud when President Potter came in. He pulled out the university's strategic plan, he looked at his org chart, and he undertook some studies to examine whether they were focusing on the right services and organized in a way to deliver them most effectively. We also have quite a few of our colleges and universities since the recent budget troubles that have put extra effort into what's called process redesign, focused mostly on the administrative side of the house, and in concert with the investment we're making in Students First, which is leading to very substantial changes in the technical environment, which changes how the work gets done. So that work is all underway across the system. As far as an estimate of cost savings, I could certainly communicate with St. Cloud and see if they put a number on it. I'm not party to seeing a number like that.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Well, the reason I think we have to ask it is because we're going to put a bill together, and if there's some of those items that should be blended into that, I mean, if we start just in an axing process, maybe we should have called a hatchet rather than an axe. If in fact there's savings there, you would think that we'd want to coordinate that. The second in the redesign in question is that it seems to be all within a campus, and I was wondering if there was any inter-redesigning between campuses. Maybe you can use the St. Cloud community to cite that model between SCSU and the Tech Community College. Is there any movement between that to share a facility, an instrument, a professor?
Ms. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative DePause, there is a tremendous amount of work going on in that area. St. Cloud is certainly a good example. There's very strong partnerships between St. Cloud State University and St. Cloud Technical College around things like physical security, emergency planning leadership. We have colleges and universities that are buying and selling excess administrative capacity. One of our schools does all the payroll processing for another school. Those partnerships are very alive and well, and we're starting now a conversation about finding more opportunity for it and making it larger. You know that Minnesota State Community and Technical College is a very strong administrative platform, and they are in conversations with a variety of other colleges to see if there is a possibility that they can do some administrative work for them, take some of the pressure off the other colleges, and take advantage of the expertise that M-State has developed over the last couple of years. So we think that is part of your expectation of us, that we be as smart as we can be about maintaining internal control discipline and financial control discipline, and preserving every dollar for student services by finding other ways to get the administrative work done.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Paz, I'd just like to comment on another example. At Bemidji, we have the university and the Northwest Technical College under one president. That had not been done before until a couple of years ago, and we are getting a lot of working together, students being able to live at the university while they go to the two-year college. We're getting some efficiencies in fiscal management and so on, and we have a 31% increase at the technical college. And so I think that's been an innovative way to have both of those institutions healthier than they might have been as a result of working together. And I think there will be continued ways. You know, we have several situations like Minnesota West, where we have five campuses and two centers working together under one president, looking for ways to try to be more efficient. So I think we're trying to find those ways to do that and still not sacrifice the quality to the student.
Mr. Chair, may I continue or not?
No.
Sorry.
Good. I think you're my elder. I respect you.
Go ahead. I'm almost everybody's elder.
I know.
Actually, my Social Security number and your age is quite congruent. But anyway, that means the same in mathematical terms.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney was looking puzzled.
No, he's looking it up. What I was kind of looking for was I think there could be some Working together in large class lectures in some of the lower math courses where the Tech College is having difficulty in at least the hiring of full-time math teachers, maybe because they cost more and they're using adjunct. But I could see in a campus class, whether you have 100 or 200 in a large lecture class wouldn't make any difference. My third question is in when we do, trying to balance the budget, if we do so wisely, we do so with reform and reduction and revenues. Revenues seems to be a trick. The only revenue that we look at maybe would be tuition. Have you looked at other revenues, and if so, what revenues have you looked at?
Mr. Chair, pause. We have been working with the presidents and with the board, as long as Chancellor McCormick has been here, to develop the relationship between the college and university foundations and their local community and their community campaigns. We've also been working through our government relations office and through the chancellor's relationships with the national associations to improve our success at receiving federal grants. And we've had some very positive results there in the last several years. We've also worked with our presidents to build up the customized training program. We think there's a tremendous opportunity in the adult, sort of the working adult retraining column, and have seen very strong improvements in that. And that counts as other revenue in our nomenclature. It's not tuition, it's not state appropriation, it's earned income. So we've seen some improvements in that area, but it's slow going.
Chair and Representative Hawes, also, in addition to those foundations, you've got several that are working very well in your community. We're trying to be as aggressive as we can on any federal funds that might be available. And there's some talk about the future in the administration about some new funds for community colleges that the president's talking about that we hope might be able to come our way at some point. We're trying to be very alert to that. They're just not going to flow. You're going to have to make a proposal and then be accountable for certain results. But we're trying to be on top of every possible federal dollar that we can get.
Mr. Chair, I've only got two more.
Go ahead.
If I can muscle through those. I have two bonding bills that where the foundations are in my district, but the service areas are in all of Minnesota, if not in one in the world. And that is in the Health Partners building and then the Integrated Science building. And both of these are needed, and both will graduate a near 100% of all the people that are graduating will be will get employment in that field. But that's new people coming in and new needs, new teachers, new buildings, new heat, new air conditioning. Have you blended this all into the deficit that you're going to be operating on? And are you really wanting those new buildings if there's going to be a growing deficit and a growing need for more teachers because of the bonding bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, that's a question that we have dialogues with every single president about before we bring you the bonding bill. And we make a judgment before the chancellor makes a recommendation to the board about the financial capacity of the campus to carry a project, both from a debt standpoint and an operating standpoint. You're absolutely right. Those two projects, the latter project most particularly because it's so substantial, have operating budget impacts for the university. But I think if President Potter were here, he would say it's absolutely critical to the future vision of the university for that building to get online.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a law degree, but I did know the answer to that question. One last comment. I think redesign is one of the ways that all governments are going to have to go in order to make this sustainable into the future. And if that's true, then how I still don't quite know how your redesign efficiencies and savings blend into the bill that we will be proposing, because the bill that we were proposing will be superimposed on what you do, and I think it should be somehow integrated. You have a comment to that?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative Hawes, our advice on that question would be for the committee to express its intentions from a financial standpoint and its expectations that the board manage the underlying decisions. We have 32 presidents that are working very hard on redesign opportunities, but I wouldn't be able to tell the committee here what to write into a bill. If you can communicate the financial outlook and your expectation that we continue to provide access and success and completion, I think you can rely on us to make the best decisions about how to execute. I would make one other observation, and that is that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, when compared nationally, spend less on administration than 45 other states in this country. So it's not that there is a huge opportunity for taking costs out on administration. There is absolutely an opportunity for improving our efficiency and our services, but I don't want you to think that there's some great unmet response in that area, because we've already worked it very hard.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Hawes, I know we're going through difficult times. Some are saying this is a new normal. I hope that won't be so. But we also have to think ahead. And if Minnesota is going to be one of the leading states in the country, and if America is going to stay as a leading country in the world, we're going to have to, in Minnesota, increase our people with college graduates, maybe from the middle 40s to the 60% or more, in order to be competitive by 2020. And many of the new jobs that we're going to need to be globally competitive and also to serve our quality of life issues are going to demand some of these new science facilities. And that's why there's been a tremendous investment and a recommendation on science facilities, because the desire to have more science and math graduates and to change to meet the great health care needs of this society. And so, while at the same time, we've got to sort of move ahead with the kind of facilities, and also we are getting some efficiencies out of those new buildings in terms of heating, air conditioning, and other things. So I just believe and I hope that we can have a vision of a great future for Minnesota down the road, and that we will continue to invest.
Mr. Chair, thank you for your allowing me to answer the question. Thank you for your answers.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we have a number of other folks backed up.
I kind of use that one. Up.
Right. Representative Eastland, go ahead quickly. You know, members, just let me, you know, Ms. King, we got about 50 or 35 minutes left. And I had hoped, you know, that we'd come in and I like, you know, I didn't have a color chart. I had to get one. I might have been black and white, so I like the colored ones much better. But I had hoped to get much more just a from-the-gut reaction from you as to what's going to happen, instead of, you know, just nice little charts we can discuss, because we got to make some tough decisions. And we had made some decisions last year when this bill, when our higher ed bill left here, it had $80 million more than what you ended up with. Am I right? And then
the governor's recommendation is,
we left here, we compromised with the House, where Representative McFarland's here, or Senate, excuse me. We gave up $30 million, you know, to the Senate between K-12 and higher ed. Then the governor unallotted $50 million on you and $50 million on the university, and now he's proposing taking another $10.5 million from you and $36 from the university. And you have to come in here and tell us, because we weren't part of this process. You know, the reason it doesn't show up on our spreadsheets, and I think Representative Downey, you were confused the other day, is because the governor did it by, there was no legislative action, and Mr. Berg was just showing us, you know, what the governor was proposing new, because we had all assumed that the first $50 million disappeared from them, and now we got to make the next cut. But I don't even know if I like where the $50 million, that's what I was hoping to find out today. Where did the $50 million get cut? And for you to tell me you hired 215 more people and you didn't affect IFO or Minnesota State College faculty, and changing it to adjunct doesn't correlate to what, let's use the name you brought up, Edna Siminski told me this fall when I stopped up there visiting the campuses. She told me that she hadn't replaced 50 faculty that had should have been replaced, and that she replaced some of them, or most of them, or many of them, with adjunct. These are the kind of things I'm trying to find out from you. We're here on public radio. What Moorhead and Mankato were doing. And I just don't want a fancy enrollment or piece of paper telling me. I want to know what you're going to telling us we should do on this new 10.5, what you did on your own, because you don't seem to want us to have, even though we give millions of dollars to everybody or we have to cut millions, we don't have a role in this.
Mr. Chair,
you know, I'll tell you what, members, I get very frustrated. Hold on, I'm chairing this committee. I'm getting very frustrated sitting on some of these citizens' commissions where people without election certificates are telling us how to send money. And Mary's committee over there gets a little bit of the money for the arts, and we're buying land left and right, and we're cutting students, and we got a $40 million plus hole in the state grant program that nobody is even addressing around here. So tell us, this isn't that difficult for us very, simple-minded folks, I guess, that shouldn't have a say. Tell us where the $50 million got cut and where the $10.5 million is going to get cut and where that's going to continue along in the base as far as what's going to get taken away from students or however you're going to do it.
I'd be delighted, Mr. Chair. I'll advance us one slide. Which is in your material.
I don't want a slide. I just want to hear it out of your mouth.
The $50 million cut represents a return to our 2006 funding level. As you saw in an earlier slide, it represents resources in 11 that would no longer be available to us. They are not resources we had in 10. So part of the complication of this story is, and I think you heard the same thing when the U was here, it's not that we had the money and now we're losing it. It's that we had the money in law, and as we approach the year, it's no longer in law. So that's the first trick. It's not that we had $50 million in our budget this year, and we hired a bunch of people, and now we're going to lay them off, but rather, we now aren't going to receive that money, so the hiring's not going to happen. That's why you hear the president's talk about maintaining vacancies and not making hiring decisions, because they don't want to hire somebody and turn around and have to lay them off. So we're creating vacancies. Mr. Chair, the 215 that I mentioned to you isn't an increase in headcount, it's a decrease in headcount. Actual headcount on the payroll has gone down 215 before this fiscal year even started. At the same time, enrollment went up. So without the $50 million, we can expect hiring not to occur rather than layoffs to occur, because we've been planning for several years now. I communicated with you last fall about our concern not to rely on that $50 million in our planning. And that's why we're due into you in 2 weeks to talk about what the implications are on a school-by-school basis. If we had hired people on the expectation that $50 million had occurred, we would now be facing 600 to 700 positions that we would have to eliminate. I would expect to see a year from now vacancies and positions that we did not fill as a result of that reduction. We're not going to hire and lay off. The most inhumane thing we could do is hire and lay off. We're just not hiring. And that adds up to over 600 positions. If we were to have presumed that $50 million was going to be available to us for new program development, because there's a lot of pressure on us for new programs, we could have developed 400 more programs, which we now don't have the resources to do. And similarly, if we had done a combination of some of either and both of those things, then you can see the result. The message from our standpoint is that enrollment is up, headcount is down, student services and the student experience is our core objective, and we're working very hard to be as humane as possible to our employees as we move through this next 12 to 18 months. This is a very difficult planning environment, and we're trying very carefully not to harm our employees by not thinking ahead to what the financial outlook is.
Mr. Chairman, we ought to add to this concern that The stimulus money that fortunately we got last year, $73 million, we've used part of that, as you well know, to buy down tuition. The other part, the presidents are using the funds to help them reshape. So a lot of the individuals that we're helping with a transition, some transition funding on health care and so on, will be leaving the system in the spring of next year.
That's right.
And so the numbers should go down.
As Mr. Chair, as the data exists for us today, we have over 100 faculty and staff that have been offered and or accepted early buyouts. 131 as of the tally I saw this morning have been offered and or accepted. We have not made offers for 11 yet. Those offers will happen here in the next 3 or 4 months. I would expect a number at least in that column for fiscal 11. And that has been a very, very effective use of the federal stimulus money because it's a one-time expense. But it also means that we're taking headcount down and that we're eliminating positions.
Mr. Chairman,
Laura, just so I understand, sorry, Chancellor, when you talked about the, you know, would have been 600 if you had actually gone ahead, assuming that you'd gotten that money, and when the stimulus money isn't there, let's, in the next biennium, assuming there's no increase, what kind of numbers do we look at then as far as layoffs and...
Mr. Chair, in the there was about $73 million of federal stimulus, and we used $36 million of it, I think, for tuition buy-down. We used 26 for tuition buy-down, and so 40-something for operating budget support. We were really, really coaching presidents and campus leadership not to build permanent costs with those federal stimulus dollars. Hopefully they didn't, but if they did, then they're going to have a hole in their budget when we get to 12.
Mr. Chair,
I can't tell you offhand that how many people are attached to federal dollars that will, you know, therefore be laid off. I could ask the campuses. I think they were all very careful about not building continuing costs.
Mr. Chairman, I think you just teed up the dilemma perfectly. This is what we face. We have 20,000 more students than we had in 2006. We have the same money as 2006. We can't continue to serve these numbers with the quality programs in the current situation. It's very difficult. And what we do in the future, you know, we hope things begin to turn, but we can't continue. We've had this great belief in Minnesota that everybody has an opportunity. We just can't continue to take the numbers and the cuts. And that's why I hope you'll do everything you can to make the cuts as small as possible, and we'll just have to face the future. We can't continue to serve the students and to have less money. There comes an end to that, and we're almost there. The one thing that I also, you raised a question about, was financial aid. I have Chris Hollings with me, who's, I think everybody would agree, is a state expert on that. It's a very serious matter. If you have time before the end, I'd like to have him have an opportunity to tell you for a couple of minutes how serious that problem is, if you have time.
Thank you. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to kind of the headcount thing we were talking about here. I'm just having a hard time putting together the numbers that you had said. You're down roughly 200 employees. So you're at eight, you went from 1870 to 1805 for headcount. Is that what I understand?
That's
what the numbers you gave us. And then for the staff, numbers are 1707 to 1705. And the staff is everybody except the managers. Well, it looks to me like your manager stayed at 1,000, both places. What happened to the faculty? What was the faculty number from what to what?
The faculty number, Representative Eastland, in 2009 we had 7,200 full-time faculty, 7,234. And in 2010, we had 7,133. So there was about 100 decline in faculty, full-time faculty. Adjunct, we had 681. in 09, and in 10, we went to 628. So 100 down in the full-time column and 50 down in the adjunct column.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so then out of the 200 staff positions that were lost, 150 of them were teachers. Is that what I'm seeing here?
If you
just add the 100 and the 50,
that's,
I mean,
right.
So it's roughly 150 of them. So we have zero cuts in the manager position. We have 150 cuts in the teachers' positions, and I assume the rest of them then were in all the support staff positions. The other 50 were in the support staff. You know, and I guess that equation there, or what that tells me, I there's something that's disheartening about that. When we have an increase in students, and we have the majority of the decrease in staff positions and our headcount in teachers. So, I mean, you can comment on that.
Representative Eastland, it's certainly disheartening, but it doesn't surprise me, because the vast majority of our employees are our teachers. We're not a big, deep bench of staff that aren't in the classroom. So, you know, on one level, it doesn't surprise me. We've seen through the work that the campuses have done with program review, we've seen a tightening up of course offerings and number of course sections because we can't afford it.
I guess, Mr. Chair, my concern is we've seen no reductions in upper management. And I guess that's what I say is disheartening.
Representative Eastland, you know, you bring up a good point if the numbers are that we're hearing. So maybe, Ms. King, what you can do is send over to the committee those numbers and those charts you're looking at, and
be happy to.
And where those cuts are. And I'm assuming in staff you break down APSME and
yes.
MAPE and middle management and whoever else is in there,
yep.
Deemsters, if you got any. Representative Poppy, does the same
line of questioning? I really want to get to slide 12 because I'm,
okay.
I have questions slide 12. So if she can.
Well, then Representative Anderson had a question. I don't know if it was to this, Representative Anderson. Jean can get the slide 12. Okay. And Representative Downey, did you have a question relating to anything?
Uh-oh.
Everybody's waiting. Okay. Go ahead. Slide 12. Representative Briner, you have a question then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This actually piggybacks on Representative Eastland's point, but this is anecdotal evidence, but while the numbers may be the same, you know, at the management level, there's been some significant changes that I'm aware of at Minnesota State, Mankato, some vice president positions have been reduced to director's positions. So they still have two people in management positions, they're lesser in terms of their cost and position. So there has been systematic effort, at least at MSU Mankato, to reduce management costs. So I do think there's a balanced effort at, you know, and I can't speak for every system, but I have seen that, so you can't just go by that number. You have to look at what positions they're filling and what the cost for those positions are.
We don't get that kind of detail when we see these numbers.
Right.
That's the problem.
So I'm just giving you this anecdote.
Maybe Ms. King can get us that kind of detail when we get the numbers.
Mr. Chair, it would be a very large task. What I might be able to do is ask the campuses in their narratives that are coming into us in a couple of weeks to speak to it at the narrative level.
Okay, thank you. And then
a very large task otherwise.
We'll get to slide 12 then, and then we'll go ahead.
All right, Mr. Chair. Slide 12 talks about the Office of the Chancellor budget reductions. Here we are talking just about the $10 million again, because this is what is represented as an absolute cut. This is about a 1.7% reduction in state appropriation to all of the colleges and universities and the chancellor's office. We are fully prepared to take in our fair share of that reduction in the chancellor's office budget, and similarly that would return chancellor's office budget to below 2006 funding level. If we were to do that in just position reductions, again, that would be a reduction of about 140 positions in the chancellor's office for the whole $10 million. We don't propose doing that. We propose about $1 million reduction in the chancellor's office and a $9 million distribution to the colleges and universities. In that way, the colleges and universities would receive about a 1.5% reduction, and the chancellor's office budget would receive about a 1.5% reduction. I would remind members, too, that the colleges and universities have access to tuition revenue, which is not available in the chancellor's office. And so at a campus level, the $10 million reduction is mitigated by tuition revenue, which isn't a resource.
And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppe, I also would tell you that we decided not to take any of the $73 million stimulus money in the office of the chancellor. All of that was channeled to the campuses, because we wanted to buy down the tuition.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And bear with me, I do have a couple of questions. I wanted to understand what fair share meant.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe, we are funded in the chancellor's office with state appropriation only. And so we look at our percentage of the state appropriation, and we take our percentage in reductions in this $10 million. So we are in this recommendation, we will reduce the chancellor's budget in proportion to the amount of state appropriation the chancellor's office receives.
So, Mr. Chair, that is a fair share, but not necessarily a fair share throughout the system. It's a fair share based on where the money comes from?
It's a fair share of state appropriation. It's about twice the cut that the campuses are taking, because we don't count tuition in our chancellor's calculations.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have another question. Could I just ask what the central office, what's your student head count?
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe, we have students that are served throughout the services we provide, but no students in the building.
So going back to the original system guidelines and principles, where you talk about that it's going to make decisions in a way that best serves students, serves the economic development needs of the state and its communities, and positioning the system for long-term financial viability, especially the part that talks about best served students. I'm going to lay this out there today, that I find the 1.7% reduction by the central office as not acceptable. I think that we have to be looking at a much higher percentage, and this is going to be harsh. This is going to be tough. The people are going to lose their jobs. That's the message that we have to continue to give across the state and throughout all of the systems. But with regards to this, I'm a very strong student advocate. I want our students to get the best services they can at the campus and the college level. And I'm quite concerned that the amount is being determined based on, you know, if I'm understanding it correctly, it's if you take 100% and the chancellor's office is taking 10% and the campuses are taking 90%, is that a fair way to determine this? That students at the local colleges and campus level are taking the brunt of the cuts based on the fact that faculty and staff are going to be losing their jobs, and those are the people that have the direct connection to our students. And if we're going to best serve students, I think we're going to have to reverse the discussion here and talk about how the central office system is going to need to take a larger percentage of the cut in order to better serve students.
Mr. Chairman and Representative
Chancellor, Poppe, go ahead.
I would just like to remind you that we've had this recent audit commission look at what we're doing, and the majority of what we do is services to campuses, IT services, that's the faculty, students, and all of that. If you took just my duties that I have by the board and the law to carry out things like presenting the making decisions, presenting the capital budget and all of that, that would be the smallest proportion of our office. So I would argue that, and I think that report will suggest that the service part of our office and the IT, which is, by the way, more than half of the office, does serve campuses and students and the whole operation. It does registration. It does all of those things. I appreciate your point about students first, and I would argue that the efforts there contribute to that, but I do understand your point.
Mr. Chair.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Chair, can I just have a follow-up, please? Thank you. With regards to the OLA report, will you be eliminating some of the divisions that OLA suggested might be a good way to go? Certainly, I think there are a couple of different divisions that were suggested.
Ms. King or Chancellor?
Yes, happy to talk about that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppe. I can tell you that we appreciate that report. We think it was well done. Every recommendation will be worked on by a group of our presidents and leadership and the board, and we will be looking at every one of those in terms of improvements that we can make. And we will be trying to get a number of them done by June, and we'll be trying to wrap that up by January of next year. And we look forward now or later to talking to you about that. But we will be absolutely dealing with every one of those. Now, a number of those concerns, I'm not being defensive, but for instance, I just give you an example. There were some presidential concerns, a lot of presidential concerns about the allocation formula. Well, I would have predicted that because those districts that don't have as many students and are losing criticize it for moving the money too fast, and those rapidly growing ones say it doesn't move fast enough. So there's some of these that are very complicated, but I assure you we're going to be very accountable on dealing with each of those, and we're prepared to report back.
Okay, Representative Anderson, or go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions and then also a couple of requests for information. If you could provide to me via email an idea of what the all funds budget is for the entire system, and then also by individual campus, what that has been, and then also a historical perspective of it over the last 10 years. So their all funds budget over the last 10 years, both as an entire group and then also as campus by campus. And then I was also interested in finding out if you can tell me, in your plans for redesign and looking towards the future and planning your budget out for the future, are you including in there money to do an increase for staff? Is that allocated? Have you committed to an increase for staff, whether that's faculty, staff, or management?
Mr. Chair, Representative, to your first question, certainly we can get you that historical information. The system all funds budget this year is $1.8 billion, and we can take that back 10 years for you. It's a little tricky for us to take it back at the institution level because we've had reorganizations, and so the data breaks for a couple of instances where we've had institutions that have merged, but we'll do the best we can and note what we can't do. As to the salary issue, labor contracts are all in place for this biennium, and so those costs have been absorbed into college and university budget planning. The cost increases were pretty modest. We had a very fruitful, positive relationship with the faculty that yielded very modest salary settlements, as I think most of state government did. For 12 and 13, those budgets, of course, aren't in place yet. We'll be here before you a year from now with a biennial budget request, and I can't tell you today whether or not we're going to propose an increase in state funds to cover salary increases. It seems improbable to me. It's more likely that we'll be faced with internal reallocations in order to pay salary increases, but we're maybe 6 months ahead of schedule on having the final answer to that.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to pile on here with an information request. This could maybe come from Mr. Berg, but to Representative Poppy's point about us maybe not fully understanding how much of that central office is actually charged back or allocated to the individual schools, P&Ls, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious what actually is kind of left then in terms of pure central office functions as compared to what is actually really indirectly going or directly going to the institution. So if there'd be a quick and easy way for us to understand,
sure,
what percentage of what's going on in your office actually is directly providing services back to the colleges, that would be helpful too. My question is a little bit of a follow-on to what President Brunix offered to us, and that was that there was some thinking, at least, about broader kind of strategic mission of the university and maybe overlaying that with the mission of MinSCU. And I'm curious whether, as part of your redesign, whether you're thinking about the bigger picture and whether, at this point in time when we're up against these brick walls, whether there's even a higher level of organizational design or broader institutional thinking, perhaps even combined with the University of Minnesota, to look at the missions of both and who the students are and how we're best able to serve them across the two entities as compared to within your, I'll call them, silos. So that's one question. And the second is, whether you're doing that or not, are there tools that you don't have that we constrain you with, whether it's collective bargaining or other constraints about locations? Are there, as you face this challenge and try to manage it, and it looks like you're managing it pretty strategically for us, is there anything that you need from us beyond more money that would give you the tools to actually accomplish your mission better?
Ms. King, I guess before you answer the first question about the mission, and I'm curious when I saw slide two, but where do you get this mission statement to serve the economic development needs of the state and its communities? Is that in statute? It doesn't say. Is that just a generalization? Because in statute, you have a couple of missions that are not anywhere near what you've got as your mission.
Mr. Chair, I think what we don't mention here that's in statute has to do with citizenship and democracy, development of good members of a democratic society. Well, I think that's missing.
Let me see the main mission when we combine the systems was this. The mission of the board is to provide programs of study that meet the needs of students for occupational, general, baccalaureate, and graduate education.
Do you want to go, Mr. Chair, to 135?
I want to go to 135, but it says the state universities, community colleges. It goes on to say in this, which was the combination of the systems together, the state universities, community colleges, technical colleges shall have distinct missions as provided in section 135A.052, subdivision 1, which you're referring to. But even those missions were kind of like a laundry list of missions for you and the university, I think, but I could be wrong. Right. I mean, they don't seem to, there's a, members, if you would care to look at this later, we can show you, but I don't know if that mission then was done by rule by the Board of Trustees based on what you thought was the mission of the, because the general mission was the first one I read, and it talks about students and degrees and educating. It has no mention of serving the economic development needs of the state, which I think is a lofty goal because we have no economic development without brain power. We have wonderful natural resources in this state, but unless you develop them
right
with brains, you don't make anything. So I can understand that, but it came right out at me as soon as I saw it. But you and I can have this discussion later, I guess. Answer Representative Downey's. We're going to run out of time.
Okay.
And Representative Welty still has a question.
The issue of the guiding principles, is that what we're talking about? Your reaction to that slide?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'll circle back to you on that. Representative Downey, to your question, on the first part, there are upwards of 200 working partnerships in place right now between our member colleges and universities and the University of Minnesota. Those are at the program design, program delivery level, and range in everything from science and technology delivery, partnerships out at Dakota County with nanotechnology, all the way to redesigning P16, teacher ed, and the industry of teacher education. So there's very strong relationships at the management sort of execution level. At the strategic level, the question that you heard the chancellor speak to, and I think the university shares this view, is the belief that we should be increasing our output. We should be increasing the number of graduates that the two of us are collectively producing over the next 10 years. And so there are conversations about that. We've seen, I think, since the merger, we've seen strong sorting out about who delivers what programs and who's in what part of the business. And that's all in furtherance of both of us being able to produce more graduates every year and have more successful students. So our belief is that we should both get bigger if Minnesota is going to prosper. And that's our sort of our shared strategic vision. We don't have, except for every once in a while, we have a little friction about who's in what business. We don't have much friction around that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'd like to comment on that, too. I've worked in another state, I believe that we have a very wonderful relationship with the University of Minnesota. I think we respect them. We cooperate. You don't hear us, from our point of view, being negative toward the university. We have these partnerships, and we make a report to the legislature on a regular basis. Both of these have governing boards. This system created a very strong governing board of women and men recommended by the governor, approved by the Senate. And one of the things that we have done very carefully, and the legislative auditors complimented us on our strategic planning and our goals and all of that, and the board has spent a lot of attention on this. This is a one-page summary. We talk about our vision and mission taken from the legislation working out, and then we've turned this into measurable goals. And we do have a strong governing board, and just yesterday afternoon, board members and others are working on taking a look at our strategic plan. The one we have now is through 2012, and we're extending it to 2014. There'll be some changes, more emphasis on completion, not just access and opportunity. So there's a lot of good work going on along that line, and I can tell you during the time that General College was being closed, of course, we had no opinion about that, but as the university moved on, Dr. Brunington and I were on the radio together explaining how, as that institution would change its mission to be an even more outstanding graduate research university, we would be able to pick up through Metropolitan State, the community colleges, and so on that. So I think we have quite an excellent a cooperative relationship between these two institutions. We do not do PhD programs. We do some applied doctorates. We don't rush into programs that they're doing. One very cooperative, I could do many of them, is on nanotechnology. We're doing a lot out of Dakota, and we're using their clean rooms, I guess, in order to present to the state a program of working together. So I just say to you that I think we're working together well, and I think we complement each other in terms of the needs of Minnesota.
Representative Welty moves the minutes of the Thursday, February 25th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Chancellor McCormick, hopefully a quick question. It's complex but quick. And that is, you know, I've heard from institutional leaders that they can probably handle the cuts that are coming in the short term, but they really see the challenge in the long term. So are your institutional leaders across the state looking at 2 and 3 years out and putting together a comprehensive plan that they're implementing now in order to address those budget, the realistic budget of what you're going to be facing in the future? Because as our state economists and demographer and budget director have told us over and over again, we're going to have increasing pressure from health and human services and other sectors of our budget, which leaves very few resources to be distributed among education institutions, whether it's K-12 or higher ed and our other needs. Mm-hmm. You've seen where our budgets have been over the past couple of years, where the amounts are, and it is difficult to make projections, but I think you kind of have an idea of where we're going to be and what neighborhood we're going to be in as far as our numbers. So are our institutional leaders across the state preparing budgets and realistic budgets based upon the numbers that we can see in the future, which are going to make your jobs very challenging?
Representative Welty, we gave in the bill last year direction to the central office to give us numbers that I believe were based on assuming that the 73 or 6 million, whatever we gave you from stimulus package, wasn't going to be there. Not assuming, however, the $10 million or whatever. So those numbers should be coming in, and that's what Ms. King was referring to. And I'm assuming and believing that those numbers will reflect the disappearance of the stimulus package and this probably adjustment now for the $10.5 million, and they already knew about the $50 million that got unallotted last year.
But beyond that, Mr. Chair, I'm also talking about the reality of our 2012-2013 budget and the numbers that we're seeing.
That's
there.
What I'm referring.
So all of that. I mean, just all of that taken into consideration.
Well, that's what we're referring to, Representative Welty. But go ahead.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Welty. I just finished a round of face-to-face conversations with all of the presidents and their staff. Traveled all over the state and met with them to talk about their budget planning for the next several years. And we have given them some planning parameters that are very pessimistic for 12 and 13 and beyond. We have asked them to be prepared to present balanced budgets for 11 and 12 and 13. And I would return to the chair's interest here. That's going to have very negative consequences. And to the chancellor's remark, you're going to hear about it. You're going to hear about program closures. You're going to hear about layoffs. You're going to hear about hiring that didn't happen. It's all because we expect presidents to balance their budget. And when you all finish your work, we're left with that task.
Representative Welty.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Chancellor McCormick. And I'm glad that those discussions are taking place. I'm glad that you're going to actually have some specifics from the institutional leaders to talk about, because the public needs to understand where we're headed in the state and what choices they're going to have to make in the future. It's not that far off. We're talking about next January. And if people aren't prepared and they haven't had these discussions, then you're going to be doing things at your institutions that you don't want to be doing, and neither do those of us around this table want to do. But unless you engage the public and have those discussions, the support may not be there.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're seeing newspaper clippings right now, because one of our conversations with presidents is have the community conversation. Get out, and you've seen stories about budget discussions all over the state, because we don't think we serve the public if we surprise them.
Representative Welty, I'm sad that we're having these discussions. Not glad, but sad. I'm glad that people are, I guess I'm hopeful that when people see them, they're going to understand the impact. Members, I wanted to let the students who are in the audience come up, and I thought we might run out of time, which we did, and the faculty that's here. So if they want to comment on this gloomy picture, you can come back on Thursday, and I'll put you first on the agenda, and then you can comment on what you heard today. And then we are going to have Deed in front of us with their budget, and we're going to have some bills. We're going to have Deed bills. And then next Tuesday we'll have some more jobs bills. And with that, members and students and faculty, come back then on Thursday and comment on this. And Ms. King, get us all, copy all of us on that information requests that we all made.
Absolutely.
Representative Donnelly, Representative Anderson, and others. Okay? With that, members, meeting adjourned.